I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Welcome to the Deceptively Fast Podcast. I'm Seth Payne, speaking somewhat quietly in my downstairs while my family sleeps upstairs. I'm probably way more excited than my voice would suggest right now, and I'm kind of taken aback by it because I'm excited about Tom Brady winning yet another Super Bowl. Seven Super Bowls, is that enough? I would say the seventh one is, as Robert Kraft might say, unequivocally the sweetest, because Tom Brady did this with Bruce Arians and really won his first truly convincing Super Bowl victory of his seven Super Bowls with Bruce Arians as his head coach. Hey, did they have more talent than any team that Tom Brady ever had in New England? Perhaps. I think sometimes we forget that some of these guys, some of these guys were some pretty damn good football players along the way. And I think it's also worth mentioning that there are some of the players like Chris Godwin. Chris Godwin was drafted one pick after the Patriots drafted Derek Rivers, a defensive end, in 2017. Levante David was a second rounder back in 2012. They've got guys on that team that the Patriots could have had, but they also do have the benefit of some higher draft picks. So regardless, it was a hell of a team performance. I think it was a great performance by Brady in doing all those things that a quarterback who has experience in the Super Bowl will do. Not hurrying things, not rushing things, just doing the quintessential, taking what the defense will give you. And I think both these defenses were trying to do just that, take away the deep balls, not let the best performers crush you on one given play. And I think that the Bucs just did a better job of executing, partly because they've got better talent. Look, the Kansas City offensive line was not adequate whatsoever. And what really killed them, aside from Pat Mahomes' toe potentially messing up his accuracy, was that Bucs defense is so fast that they could play conservatively, they could play zone defense, and when the Chiefs try to do what they're so good at doing, is just crushing teams with the short passing games and getting the run after the catch, the Bucs defenders and their linebackers especially can just chase all of that stuff down. So Levante David, Devin White, Devin White isn't the most consistent guy in the world, but man, he can run. So when you're trying to dink and dunk and matriculate the ball down the field, as the old Kansas City Chiefs might say, I think it was that Hank Stram that used to say that, you can't do that against that Bucs defense when they're playing as disciplined as they were. And I think discipline, poise, all of those things, those words, those are probably the key words in this game. The Bucs just looked like the team that had been there before, didn't they? The Chiefs were here last year, but the Chiefs were making so many hot-headed penalties. And speaking of penalties, the Bucs were the third most penalized for defensive pass interference this year. So this was no accident. This wasn't like a surprise that the Bucs might get themselves into penalty trouble. And you know for damn sure it wasn't a surprise to Tom Brady. And Brady was working those guys. That the little grudge match that he had there with Tyrann Mathieu, I'm sure they'll make up afterwards and everything. I think that was as much about the other safeties and defensive backs as it was about Tyrann Mathieu. You could see there were a few times where Tyrann thought that he had help when he didn't. The guys just weren't there. So Brady was really doing a really good job of manipulating the defensive backs, manipulating the safeties with his eyes, and then just cranking out, like creating calls. One thing you got to understand about Brady is that nobody coaches his wide receivers better than Tom Brady does. So when you're going against a team like the Bucs and they have certain tendencies and they've got routes that they hate and there's going to be times where they get grabby, that's all by design. That's all coached. So I'm only half joking, or I guess I'm only half serious about being super happy that it was Bruce Arians that won instead of Bill Belichick. But I'm pretty happy about that. I think that Belichick is a hell of a coach. Don't get me wrong. I'm not sitting here saying that, you know, it was all Brady or anything. They did an incredible job through those years. But I feel like Brady has been in some respects criminally underrated by his own coaching staffs in New England. And I want Brady to be able to get as much possible credit as he's due. And to do it, you know, frankly, with a team that as of yet has no reputation of cheating. Sorry, they just don't. They've got a reputation of maybe Bruce Arians liking the whiskey a little bit too much sometimes. Not in an alcoholic type of way. He just, he is notoriously said he just doesn't know what guys like Belichick spend all that time watching film. Belichick would rather be sitting on his boat, sipping on a whiskey every now and then in the evening and enjoying himself. So good for Bruce Arians, good for Tom Brady, and frankly, good for anybody that ever wins a Super Bowl. I'm always jealous of all of you. So that's my prelude to this episode. Drew Hodgson and I recorded this before the Super Bowl. And we'll probably catch up with each other on the Super Bowl itself. But really, a boring Super Bowl. this reminds me of back when I was growing up, when every year it was a January tradition to sit down and watch an AFC team just get absolutely throttled by an NFC team. So thank you, Patrick Mahomes, for helping me relive my youth and watching the AFC team get throttled by an NFC team. And look, they'll be back. Pat Mahomes will be back next year. He'll get surgery on his toe this offseason. I think Tyrann Mathieu is going to be just as good as he ever was. And there's a really good chance that we see this as a rematch of the Super Bowl next year. Here comes the Deceptively Fast Podcast. I promise this is going to end at some point. I'm going to stop bringing you on specifically to ask you about Deshaun Watson, but that's kind of, I feel selfish doing it because I'm a Houston sports radio host, obviously, but this is the national story right now, is little Carson Wentz's potentially fall by the wayside. It's going to end up being Deshaun Watson standing there all by himself. Matt Stafford's gone off to LA, and it's going to be Deshaun Watson, and this is going to be the next 3 months of us fielding stories about the Texans claiming that there's no way in hell they'll trade Deshaun Watson. I'll never trade Deshaun Watson to when I think it inevitably happens. I know you and I disagree about that a little bit. I am curious if you heard Brett Favre weigh in, because it's, you know, this is what happens during Super Bowl week. All the old Hall of Famers get interviewed and you find out that none of them actually been paying all that much attention to what's going on. Yeah. Yeah. So Brett Favre and what's his name from Dick Vermeil all weighed in, and they kind of give their old man, old school takes, which is fine if you're a young man and you have the same opinion as them. But Favre did it in such a way that it doesn't make any sense. And you start to wonder, wait, maybe Favre isn't like the super intelligent guy that we thought he was. Maybe he isn't the most eloquent person on earth the way he was always reputed to be.
Yeah, how long is that list of people that were convinced he was super intelligent?
It was really long.
It's waned.
It was all down somewhere years. Like out in the outer reaches of Kill, Mississippi. Not Kill, Mississippi proper, but the outlying provinces.
Yeah, the rural areas. Yeah.
I'm kind of old school. I think, you know, you play, you get paid a ton of money to do a certain job and just do it and let the chips fall where they may. I think we make too much money to voice an opinion, but I'm not saying he's wrong. Again, I think it's a different day and time, and it'll be interesting to see how the organization handles it. I don't mind, honestly, when people criticize Deshaun
for if you disagree with me and you think that he's being a spoiled diva and that he should just go back to work, I get that sentiment. I disagree with it. But the problem with Favre is that Favre was amongst the biggest divas in the league when he was a player.
Oh, yeah, for sure. I mean, I think you and I both know that when we were playing and it was Green Bay South in Houston, and we heard enough stories firsthand from guys that played with Favre when they were there together in Green Bay. And the stories that I heard were preposterous.
Oh, really? Oh, heard more than I did.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. I mean, 100%. I mean, it was stories like, you know, demands that he had when they were traveling on the road, that he had to have his own like travel bubble at all times. He had to have, you know, open seats on the plane.
He was like Barry Bonds. That was always right. The rumor about Barry Bonds, right? That he had his own office and everything. Kirk Cousins had his own office when he was in Washington, but it was, I think he probably requested it this way because he knew the optics of it would be bad. It was like a little broom closet. Like, it was worse than a broom closet. It was like an irregularly shaped corner that he was kind of wedged into, and he had a cubicle where he could go and break down film and do some of his stuff, but not like a broad expanse of real estate the way apparently Barry Bonds and Brett Favre had.
Which is like, you know, do you really have a problem if your quarterback is requesting additional space so he can actually study and watch film?
Right.
Other guys? That's not, I mean, who's
really Cousins is that kind of guy too.
Right.
Like Favre would be asking for an extra cubicle so he could.
Yeah. Privacy services. For dong shots.
I need extra room underneath the desk here. Yeah. Dirty old man. That's what he is now. He's a dirty old man. I guess he's reformed. I don't know. So the other stories revolving around Deshaun are that the Texans are 100% committed to focusing on bringing him back into the fold. That was from Ian Rappaport, which is the appropriate tactic to have. And it's funny that, I mean, they're talking about we need to recruit him back or bring him back. I mean, he is still technically on the team, but this is where we've gotten to the point where the organization, at least I think, understands, all right, this is for real. And he's really put out. We got to figure something out here.
Yeah. They're fully committed to making sure they bring back the starting quarterback, one of the best in the league, who's under contract. They're fully committed to that. So that's
a good statement to your fans.
You are moving in the right direction. Well done.
Adam Schefter came out with a report on Sunday that the equipment guy, the head equipment guy, and all his staff, another couple front office employees were gone, which isn't all that uncommon when a new general manager like Nick Caserio comes in. But Jack Easterby is the guy that everybody's always worried about there. I wonder with the equipment staff, though, that's not as standard. When I say it's standard, I mean it's standard to lose some people and for the new GM and the new people to bring in their own guys. Equipment staffs tend to last throughout different coaching regimes. And what Schefter is saying is that Deshaun Watson was particularly attached to the equipment manager and that this might not sit all that well with him, where do you stand on that? Because I can see you rolling your eyes a little bit. Are you rolling your eyes at the Texans making a mistake? Are you rolling your eyes at Deshaun potentially being a diva, or maybe a little bit of both?
Might be both. I mean, I think it's one of those things where you can read. Now we're at the point where you can read into every single fact that is being dropped into the story. You know, but I mean, ultimately, if the deciding factor on whether Deshaun ends up with the Texans for the next several years or this upcoming season, most of all, I don't think it's going to come down to whether the equipment manager was there or not.
It could be one of the small things, though, right?
It could be. I mean, it doesn't look
you build good. The case.
Yeah. I mean, he might be one of those guys where at this point he's looking for any reason to be, you know, pissed off. And maybe that's just like icing on the cake. But it's just they have so much work to do with like the big stones that they're trying to prioritize that I don't think the little ones are necessarily the problem. It just doesn't look good when it's already making it to the press.
I think that this is where I feel bad for equipment guys. I think that whenever there's a scandal or whenever there's an expose written, as there was twice this year by Sports Illustrated about the Texans, I feel like the equipment guys are the first ones that front office guys start wondering about, because the equipment guys are down around the players all the time. Some of them do get to form pretty close relationships with the players, the star players especially. They need extra special treatment. The guys are around them all the time. So whether it's fair or not, I feel like anytime some expose comes out, the equipment guys must be like, oh, great. Like, I'm gonna have some low level intern come down here. He's an errand boy sent from the GM, and he's gonna start trying to buddy, and he's gonna try to infiltrate his way in and see who's the mole here. And now I'm gonna have to sniff out this mole and walk around him. That part of new regimes taking over, new head coaches coming in, new general managers coming in, I think it comes down to how paranoid an individual guy is. And if I were the Texans right now, I would, whether it's warranted or not, I'd be paranoid as hell.
is that common course then? Like, is this guy, you think he was just caught in the fray? Like, he was just, it's possible.
I mean, who knows?
Maybe
not. Maybe he knew something. I don't know.
It is weird timing. I mean, why would you bother doing it now? You know, like, of all your priorities, that is a little weird.
I guess, yeah. And who has the guys have their own equipment guys? Maybe Casario from up in New England wants to bring his deflator fella down or something. Maybe those guys. I've always wondered in New England, like, when you remember how much they talked about doctoring up the balls and everything just to get everybody prepared for playing in bad weather. They beat the hell out of the balls. Remember when Bill Belichick got up and he gave that press conference where he talked about how they know everything about the football and do all these things except for the PSI. He knows nothing about that.
He doesn't know about that.
We know everything about every little detail except the PSI. I've never bothered to learn anything about that.
Yeah, I'm so in the weeds with every single element of my team, except for anytime I'm in trouble for anything publicly.
That never once occurred to me.
That's someone else's job. In fact, that was the equipment guy's job who we fired. So
maybe they'll bring down the deflator and a couple of those other guys. Maybe that's one of the...
Yeah, I mean, it couldn't hurt. They're kind of at that stage.
I always felt like when Bill O'Brien first got to Houston or any of these guys go anywhere, I feel like there's a moment where they get in and they probably look around and they're like, okay, so who's in charge of giving me all the good secret information? Like, who's in charge of all the espionage and everything? Not that it has to be illegal. Settle down, Patriots fans. But, you know, towing right up to the edge. Right up to the edge.
Yeah. I think what would be great is if maybe he's just bringing in another equipment manager who's more a competing evangelist for Easterby, and we're just gonna have like a televangelof, and we're just gonna see who's gonna win this.
What if there's like, I don't know what Easterby is. Maybe he's a Methodist or something, and Casario needs something to counterbalance that, so he's bringing in a Presbyterian or a Baptist. I mean, if you want to go big guns,
what are the natural? I don't know which ones are like the most combative with each other. I'm not dialed into the individual denominations that way.
You need one of them Seventh Day Adventists there, or is that whatever
Maybe like a Pentecostal.
Yeah, something fundamentalist is what you need if you're coming to play.
Yeah.
I was going to do this for people because people wonder, wait a second, how can a player sit out with this new collective bargaining agreement because the penalties are so much more onerous? I got corrected. I mispronounced that word the other day. Just Sean and one of the listeners to the podcast. So there you go. There you go, Dave. I corrected my pronunciation of onerous for you.
Did you say odorous?
I think I said onerous.
Oh, onerous. Yeah.
I had a friend once I played with, Brant Boyer, who's now the special teams coach for the Jets. And he's a very, very good special teams coach, but he's from Utah. And like, he's been in, he's been with the Jets. He's been with the Jets through three head coaches now. Robert Saleh retained him because he's like the only good thing on the Jets. They've had really good special teams units. But he used to say ornering. He used to say honoring. It used to drive me insane, but somehow I think it seeped into the way I pronounce onerous.
I always kind of felt like you had the option. That was one of those ones that, can it not go either way? Or are those two actual separate words and I'm just ignorant to that?
Ornery or honoring?
Yeah, can't you? Isn't it like that one's optional?
Oh, maybe. I don't know. I guess say I get busted for saying elementary school because some of the people in upstate New York say elementary school.
Yeah, that's rough.
And I would say, people would say, Seth, no, it's elementary. And I'm like, no, look in the dictionary. And I looked it up. And I'm like, nope, there's no acceptable elementary. Yeah. And then I would say, well, you know, it's like in Sherlock Holmes, like elementary Dear Watson. And they'd say, no, he doesn't say that either, you dumb fool.
No, you invented something he does in the show, and you're not British, so no.
They say that in upstate New York. They say elementary. So what are the penalties if Deshaun Watson were to sit out? Because the penalties are worse this year, and the team can't relieve you of those penalties. They used to, you might have a bunch of fines stacked up, but if you came back into the fold, the team would say, all right, listen, buddy, we're gonna let bygones be bygones, and you're not gonna get fined. Now you have to pay those fines no matter what. So if Watson missed mandatory mini camp, it would cost him $95,000. That feels like a relative pittance for a guy that's probably going to make about $500 million in his career. If he misses 28 days of training camp, it would be $1.4 million. Three preseason games would be $1.86 million. So he could be looking at, just through training camp, getting fined $3.3 million. He gets into the regular season, and of course, he doesn't get paid for the games that he doesn't play. And if he... if he tried to retire or something, he'd have to pay back some of his signing bonus. He's not going to try to pull that move. He's not like at the point where he's saying like, no, I'm going to retire instead of play for you guys. So that's not that bad. I mean, he'll lose his salary for this year. I guess the biggest thing would be that he's under contract already for 4 or 5 more years. If he misses a good chunk of the regular season, then he doesn't get credit for this season. So he would just, when he starts playing next year, he would have to just start with this year's salary, and his big, big money in his contract doesn't kick in for another year or so. So that would be the biggest penalty, but it's not like, that's not enough, I think, for somebody who's made as much as he has and for who's going to make as much as he will. I don't think the financial penalties are what are going to scare him away.
I don't either. I mean, it's hard to envision a scenario where that's really the deciding factor, where the pressure from having missed the games is what's really bringing him back. It seems like the team itself is incentivized to try to make moves faster than that would be the main issue, because they need to put together some kind of team and figure out who's playing quarterback if that's the route they go.
Unless they're just going to tank this year. I feel I think that part of the coaching staff they've assembled, the roster that they have right now, I think they're going to take these next couple months to figure out if they can get Deshaun Watson back engaged. And if not, they're going to say, well, the hell with it. This roster sucks already anyway. We're just going to go ahead and rebuild and get as much as we can for Deshaun.
I mean, I guess, you can see that, you know, they're appreciating the cap trouble that they're not that it's too egregious, but I mean, you can perceive it as serious cap trouble if you try to keep certain guys.
You can't be aggressive.
You
where
can't
they
be
are
aggressive.
Right now.
Right. You can't be aggressive. So you could look at it as almost like an Astros rebuilding mode if they decide to just go, you know, all the way and try to do it that way. But God, that would be brutal.
All right, I've cleansed myself of Deshaun Watson talk for now. I wish the best for the equipment manager. He's not the guy that was there when I was... I wish I had written his name down. He seemed like a good guy, good reports from everybody. He wasn't the guy that was there when I was there, so... So he's dead to me. No, I think those guys, if they're good at what they do, they bounce back and find something else. Aaron Rodgers, last night at an NFL awards show that... I don't know if you saw any of it at all, Drew... very weird, like everything in COVID. Steve Harvey was standing in an empty Raymond James Stadium. And wait, is it Raymond James? Whatever the hell the Tampa Stadium is. Standing in an empty stadium and talking to like a screen full of NFL players who were watching this. Guys, and it was, you know how these things go. It was the guys that were going to receive awards for the most part watching. Like Alex Smith was there because he won the Comeback Player of the Year award. DeAndre Hopkins, I think, won Player of the Year. Aaron Rodgers was there because he would ultimately win the MVP. He's the third player in NFL history to lead the league in passing touchdowns, 48 passing touchdowns, while throwing the fewest interceptions, 5. I don't know about you, Drew, but I covered a team here in town, the Houston Astros, who led the league in home runs and had the least strikeouts, and they did it on the up and up. I don't know about this Aaron Rodgers fella, but all I know is when you start stacking together performances like this, when you're in your late 30s after a few years off, I don't know, maybe there's a little bit of the old Peyton Manning longevity clinic action going on. I don't know what Aaron Rodgers' fiance's head shipped to her house.
Yeah, no, I think when you watch his style of play, it seems obvious that performance-enhancing drugs are definitely part of that.
Well,
no, I mean, I think it's weird to see a guy like that and appreciate the level of performance that he turns in year over year and still feel like he seems underrated to me. Like, he still seems kind of underrated, like underappreciated in a way.
I don't, I'm one of the people that who underrates him, just because I think if it had been in a different situation and he didn't have Mike McCarthy, if he had somebody that was I mean, if he had obviously Andy Reid or somebody like that, or just a better overall head coach, I think they would have built on more of what they could have done. Because you see now he's in an actual system. And he's and he's playing within the system. There was never a system before that was what Mike McCarthy wanted to do, what Aaron Rodgers thought they could do, and never the tween would meet, you know, especially once some of the talent started leaving the building. So I think these last few years, the biggest thing I always looked at, if I got into an argument with somebody about Tom Brady versus Aaron Rodgers, I would say, yes, Aaron Rodgers has the incredible plays. He's got some incredible performances and in some incredible seasons. This is his third MVP. But if you look at year by year where they were in terms of offensive ratings, offensive efficiency, scoring offenses, the Packers are all over the place. They'll spend some years middle of the pack, then back at top five, where the Patriots, they're almost always top five with Tom Brady.
You can you not attribute that to, you know, what you had referenced, which was, you know, less effective coaching, especially the offensive coordinators? I feel like in Green Bay were just not at the same level that some of the guys that were going through New England, and then top to bottom. And then they also, New England still, people, I don't also fully appreciate the kind of talent that Tom Brady had around him too. And I guess you can make arguments for some of the role players that, you know, Aaron Rodgers had when he was in Green Bay, but they just are not on the same caliber as the guys that were going in and out of New England.
Well,
I don't think.
I think that when it comes to stuff like that, my first response is I just don't care. I just want to know, okay, but what's the finished product? Yeah. You know, it's like, hey, fair. You know what? Look at like Instagram models today versus the women that people thought were hot in the 1950s. And it's not even close. Like your 200th best looking woman in the world today is way hotter than most of these supposed beauties from the 50s, because they work out. They've got other ways to tweak and everything. It's just, it's not that they're any different genetically or anything. They're just, they're working in a better system. So likewise, Tom Brady was working in a better system than Aaron Rodgers, and it made Tom Brady better. Sure, Aaron Rodgers was a better uncut gem than Tom Brady was, but he just always remained a little jagged. He was dealing with imperfect jewelers and or Instagram filters.
He still only was winning Super Bowls.
Hardly. Who? Rodgers.
That's a good point. He still only was doing it.
Yeah. It was this is Tom Brady's 10th Super Bowl. This is the part.
Five.
This is the part about Aaron Rodgers, though, too. This is the kind of this little appeal to your meathead side, that he saw something this last year where he was looking at a Super Bowl clip from 10 years ago. And he said, quote, "I was realizing the thing I was working on back then so much was the sinking into the hitch at the top of my drop. And that was one area that I think was lacking based on my injuries banged up the last couple of years and some of the adjustments I had to make fundamentally to deal with a knee and a leg that wasn't as strong as it used to be. And that's why I really got back into squatting, because he wanted to build that up so he could put a ton of pressure." So at the, when if you, for the listener, you can think of like when he's dropping back and he hits his back foot there, a lot of your power really comes from, you know, loading up those springs in your legs and sinking your hips into it. And he started doing that a lot more this year. So it wasn't, that's obviously not, you know, that's not Barry Bonds strength there or anything, but there is something about just squatting or deadlifting or leg pressing that I think sometimes guys get away from it, especially if you're not in a power position, and people don't realize how much it helps your athletic ability. That you don't want to think that it does, but that it makes your ability to move your own body is so much better when you're doing some kind of heavy leg workout.
Oh, absolutely. And it translates across sports. I mean, I feel like you can watch tennis players.
Oh yeah.
And you see them. I mean, all that power
golfers now
coming from their base. Yeah. Golfers now, it's the same way. I mean, a lot of offensive linemen, probably guys that you played against, that they didn't always, you know, they weren't that impressive up top. I mean, it's not like they had, you know, incredible biceps or like a built chest, but they always were able to just, like, they were so stout. And a lot of that, it just all comes from their base.
It's one of the worst things that happens to kids in this country.
Here we go. All right. Yeah. Let's go.
Just said it that way. Yeah. This is one of the true.
Yeah.
This is one of the worst things that could happen to a child. Overemphasis on bench press. I can't think of anything worse. I can't.
Yeah. I can't. I know. But, I can't either. It's got nothing to do with public education.
But when it comes to actually sports, like in a lot, most other countries, people care more about either squats or the Olympic lifts. I'm not a huge fan of Olympic lifts, but the lower body and all of that, like, because that's where your power comes from. I don't know where along the way Americans got so obsessed with the bench press. Maybe it's just because of Hollywood. Maybe because we're just more vain over here. So people worry more about the stuff you can see. Where for athletic performance, working your legs is by far the most important thing. The bench press hardly matters for most sports.
No, not at all. It doesn't matter for football at all, really.
Yeah,
it's such a surface level measurement of strength and nothing else, because there's almost no technique. There's very little technique. I know they try to act like there is. There's really not. I mean, it's so much your final points.
I'm not going to make excuses here. Like, I'm not a great bench presser. Like, so much of it is your attachments, your arm length, all that stuff. Because some people can just like bench press like crazy.
Yeah, it's like physics. It's just the physiology that you have. To the angles.
Used to drive me insane because I was one of the stronger guys on the football field on average, but it was because of my legs and my back actually. Like I could do pull-ups all day long for a big guy. You know, I say all day long.
Yeah.
Like when I weighed like 320 pounds, I could do like seven strict pull-ups. Yeah. That's a big deal for a 320 pounder. But the other big advantage for doing your legs, this is for anybody listening that does like CrossFit or something. Well, you guys know this because you do CrossFit and you're psychotic. But just when I go work out at some group fitness place, I get my ass kicked at everything by the 120-pound women that can just fly around everywhere, except when it comes like the rowing machine, which I can just I almost destroy the rowing machine because I'm not sinking a boat down with me. So like all that power doesn't have to actually push a boat. And you can just fly through all those workouts. That part's fun.
That feels so good. Cause I'm the same way. And it just feels like sweet justice when you're trying to like prove to them that there is something to the fact that they just only weigh 120 pounds or whatever it is. And you're like, no, really?
Oh,
I am pretty fit.
Normal size people don't understand how hard it is for big guys to run. Like the struggle that you have just biomechanically. I remember
doing burpees. It's like,
my nephew like moved up a couple weight classes his senior year in high school, and he'd always been a little, you know, he'd always been a smaller guy, and he moved up to a middle or a heavier weight because he had his growth spurt, and he was like, holy shit, holy crap, Seth, I had no idea. I always thought you guys were just being lazy. Like, dude, no, you're carrying around 100-pound backpack on your legs.
No, and you're like, and you only gained 17 pounds. Like try 90.
You know what I've seen? Booger McFarland does Peloton, and he'll put his workouts up sometimes.
Yeah.
And it's like he'll finish, you know, fourth place out of 4,000 people. And you just think about, he's got powerful legs, you know. And I'm guessing he still does heavy leg workouts or something. So you get on those. And I've seen this too sometimes, like some like roided up power lifters.
Oh yeah,
we'll do the rowing machine, and they just crush it.
Murder.
There's no wind resistance. There's no water resistance. You just do it.
Yeah, they're splits. They're doing like, you know, like 1 minute 9 second 500 meter splits, and yeah.
So the other award, Alex Smith got comeback player of the year, broken fibula and tibia. If you've never seen any of the documentaries about it, they're highly inspirational, and I would highly recommend that you don't watch them because they're disgusting. Don't watch the part with his leg all misshapen and everything. He looked like something out of Misery the movie.
Yeah, I can't watch that stuff. It's too graphic for me at this point. I feel like once I've been there, I'm not into it.
He had 17 surgeries because of infections, and I'm just the thing that I think about when I hear 17 surgeries is A, obviously that's a whole lot of pain and discomfort and rehab and everything, but B, coming out of general anesthesia that many times. Now, I don't know if he had to do general anesthesia for all of them. Maybe some of them you could do epidural or something, but that alone seems like it would take a toll on your body.
Yeah. I mean, that once or twice, sign me up. It's actually pretty fun. I mean, some of those drugs, those Twilight drugs they put you under before before you get into it. It's good stuff. I could see how it becomes problematic. But the rest, I have to think they're probably just doing like local and cleaning it out or something like that. That's a lot of times to be put under. And that wasn't even that long ago, really.
Yeah, I was thinking about getting my knee replacement this year, but I'm going to put it off. And one of the reasons is because I already had surgery once within this calendar year. And between that and COVID, I'm like, I don't want to go under general anesthesia again. I don't know. As low as your chances are of conking out under general anesthesia, I've had over like 20 surgeries now. I don't know. I feel like I'm starting to, I don't know. I'm getting up into that risk category where at some point, if I keep doing it, there's going to be some kind of complication.
Oh yeah. I'm having my ninth next week. And that's starting to feel like quite a lot. And it's been a little while since I've been under general anesthesia too. And then you see like the horror stories about people that are still, it's like they have the, what is it? Where they're awake. They're actually awake. Like one of the three drugs, you know, it paralyzes you, but you still have the sensation of what's going on under it.
Yeah. Like you can feel everything and hear everybody.
Oh my God. Like if you could invent your worst nightmare, that's it.
You know, you could either feel all the pain or even worse, hear them making fun of your body. Yeah. I don't need that. I don't need that at all.
I don't need to hear the anesthesiologist mocking my body. I'm like,
I don't need to hear the nurse be like, ew, he's old. I'm not that old. I'm screaming. Right, I'm not that old.
Right. He's hairier than I thought.
Oh, that was after I had my hernia surgery. I guess I didn't realize they were going to, they go in through your belly button. But I didn't realize they were going to shave me or anything. And there's somehow, I felt weirdly violated somehow. I don't know why. Yeah. I woke up and the other thing, okay. I was a little bit embarrassed because that morning I had thought, oh boy, I hadn't really groomed myself in a while. And I'm like, this will be embarrassing. I know I'm going to be buck naked when I get up on the table there. And I don't know exactly where they're making the incision. So let me groom this up a little bit. But I messed up the guard and I knocked it right down to the skin, which is not my normal deal. You know, I've been married happily for too long to worry about that level of maintenance or anything. Yeah.
It's not like you're going to be on camera.
I was, you know, I was kind of in a hurry. So I guess it's just a very... It was like a reverse mohawk. It was a reverse mohawk above my junk. And, as they lifted me up onto the table, I almost thought about saying something about it. Like, hey, I just want to apologize. But there was no couth way to pull that off. So I just went to sleep. And then I woke up and I kept thinking like, well, okay. I think they said they were going to go in through their belly button. I'm not sure. So maybe they won't even see that part. But I woke up and they had shaved like right from where all my belly hair had been down to my completely barren landscape down there.
So like it really just created like a perfect target area for your most like sensitive parts that you're the most insecure about. Like these are the areas that I'm the most insecure about.
Yeah, they had circled me like a sorority girl or something. Exactly. Like, your problem spots. Yeah. So Carson Wentz, I mentioned this earlier. Carson Wentz, the reports are that he's likely to be traded. Originally, the Eagles were thinking they were going to get two first-round picks for him. The rest of the league said, did you watch Carson Wentz play this year? Are you familiar with why you're trying to trade him? And Mortensen and Schefter said that there are whispers that over the years, Wentz has struggled at times with his ability to forge relationships across the locker room. But others believe that could have been a natural byproduct of him and the team not living up to lofty expectations. How do you feel about that? I don't know. I feel like that's a strange thing to put in there because unless I hear that people on the team actively disliked him, I think it plays a little too much into that notion that, oh, the quarterback is the leader of men and the charismatic guy that everybody loves, it's not necessarily like that amongst really good quarterbacks. It's not your high school football movie where the quarterback is the best looking kid in the school and the leader of the team and everything. I don't think that all of a sudden Carson Wentz is like a bad dude or something. He might not be like that. Oh wow. He's the best guy in the world and everybody loves him. Like Pat Mahomes, I suppose.
Yeah. I mean, my feeling, especially having played center and I guess, you know, being in that role where supposedly you're supposed to be, you know, as close to the guy who's running the offense in that way, is that it's just always overrated. It's just, they put way too much stock into that kind of like that mythology around the quarterback having, you know, been the one that's taking us to the championship every year. And he's the guy that's, you know, the leader of men and the general on the field. And to some extent, that's true. I mean, guys like Peyton Manning, of course, I mean, they're guys that they understand the offense in and out. They know how to make decisions on the field. That's critical when you're, you know, in situations like that. But yeah, I don't put that much into it. I can see how just theorizing on the outside as a guy who just has a reputation for being so straight laced and buttoned up. You know, yeah. there are teams that aren't real responsive to that kind of personality.
Right.
You know, so you can see that over time people are just kind of like, they're not buying into it. But at the same time, if all the other pieces are in place, it's irrelevant.
Well,
it's a moot point.
If you look at, okay, those big three, Manning, Breeze, and Brady, those guys are kind of the paradigm for what you would want in terms of, like, they're the leaders of the offense, they're coaches on the field, all of that. But then there are guys like Eli Manning, Russell Wilson. They're a tier below those three quarterbacks, too. You know, I don't know about Russell Wilson and Drew Brees, just given number of championships. But Russell Wilson is not the same natural leader that, I would say, like, even a Deshaun Watson is. Deshaun doesn't have the success yet, but he's kind of a natural born leader, where Russell Wilson is not. Eli Manning is not a natural born leader at all. I think the only time I worry about it is if you're actively harming your relationship with your teammates, like,
right.
Like Jeff George, Ryan Leaf, a young Kerry Collins. I guess, what would you say about David Carr? I didn't know, because David Carr was a young player when I played with David Carr, and he was a disappointment as a number one overall pick. But did he actively harm? I know. Okay, I'm going to ask you a question. You don't have to speak for yourself, but speak for anybody else. Right. Yeah. I know that some offensive linemen, and I won't put this part out in the promo or anything, Drew. I know that some offensive linemen would get upset with David Carr, because the one thing that he did that was unforgivable was that if he had a chance to run for positive yardage just to avoid getting a sack on the sack total. Because for those of you who don't know, a sack is only, it's not when the quarterback gets tackled, it's when he gets tackled behind the line of scrimmage. So if a quarterback is scrambling and he can throw the ball away, or he can run for a quarter yard past the line of scrimmage, then the offensive lineman doesn't get chalked up for a sack. Carr was notorious for taking a sack instead of throwing an incompletion, or running out of bounds like a half yard before the line of scrimmage and making no effort to get back to the line. Is that fair?
That's completely fair. I mean, there are two things. One is, my understanding is that it wasn't even that he was notorious for doing it insofar as, hey, this is just his play style. These are the decisions that he elected to make, you know, for just because it's what he was used to or conditioned to do. It was more that it was a tactical move that was on purpose. He was doing that on purpose, right? Because it was the best way to boost his quarterback rating. And so when he's intentionally doing it to boost his own quarterback rating and to bring value to himself at the end of the season for, you know, the prospect of moving on to another team. Meanwhile, the rest of the offense, especially the offensive line, is suffering as a result of that, because those all go down to sacks, right? So I was personally on and started those games, you know, where we were like setting a record for the most sacks ever. And you're looking at it going, I mean, 2/3 of these are him just like running out of bounds behind the line.
And I never understood.
That is brutal.
For one, there's the selling out of your offensive lineman. Obviously, you don't want to be that guy. But then two, even if you're being selfish, like, how do you not understand that, man, 3rd and 7 is a whole lot better than 3rd and 17. You know, like, if you're trying to bolster your stats, there's nothing better than a good third down completion percentage or a third down conversion percentage, first downs achieved, all of that. It was, and I don't know.
He proved the point, though, because he signed for a pretty decent contract, all things considered. When I think he ended up, was at Carolina, I think was he left there and he got some decent money, you know, going there afterwards. So
just because some of the numbers didn't look that bad. Well, I don't because know, some of the quarterback
rate, he finished like second that year in overall quarterback rating.
Oh, did he really?
Yeah.
After 2007?
Yeah, I think so.
No yeah. kidding. Oh, yeah. I didn't realize
yeah.
that.
Yeah, it was up there. So, you know, it was one of those things where, you know, it looked, and I mean, feel free, like you correct that, but it was up there, and he was able to leverage that into a pretty decent deal when he left there. So yeah, it was pretty rough. I mean, beyond that though, I would say it took me some distance from that experience with him to look back and realize that, yeah, I mean, I had never had really any problem with any quarterback I had ever played with, because you cannot, I mean, you're a cult member, you know, yeah. about, you have to be, you cannot.
Oh yeah. You can't,
you will not be successful if you try to create any kind of schism there, really, especially yeah. as a rookie. I mean, I was a rookie at the time. So, you know, I looking back, I realized, like, yeah, this is a guy who I had no problem with, a guy, great personality. I mean, he's very easy to get along with and everything else, but like, is he a leader? Nah, it's hard to.
And I think he would say the same thing. I mean, I've seen him say it in interviews before where he just was either immature or just didn't really understand what was expected or needed from him. And exactly. he learned it
yeah.
later on, but unfortunately, you know, sometimes you only get a few chances. I guess yep. Jamarcus Russell would be another one that I don't know if he was disliked by his teammates, but his teammates, I know his teammates understood that, oh, wow, this guy's just not getting it. He's in a different world, in a different place.
Yeah. He's not exactly, you know, screaming leadership.
He was, I think it's one of the misconceptions about Jamarcus Russell was that he was just some kind of a physical specimen or something, or that he had a strong arm, but not a good arm. He had a phenomenal arm. It wasn't yeah. just strong. It was everything. It was the touch. It is. Yeah. He was huge, like in a way that he could have been a defensive lineman. It was, mm-hmm. he had absolutely everything going for him, except for an affinity for the purple.
Well, you look at him in his skill set and you think, you know, this is Ben Roethlisberger.
Yeah.
I mean, this is a guy who can move around well enough to be, you know, mobile and dangerous and make every possible throw from any spot on the field, you know, but the guy just like could not wrap his head around the offense, it seemed like.
The other thing that happened this week was Roger Goodell spoke to the media about a whole bunch of stuff that's going to be coming up in the spring. The vaccinations, I don't think this is probably any huge news, given that none of us really know what the hell is going to happen with vaccinations over the 6 months. But the one big thing is that, and I mean, we knew this before, but I guess he wanted to reiterate, the NFL can't force players to get vaccinated.
Right.
And so as far as, okay, are they going to be able to go back to normal because everybody's going to get vaccinated and you can, but even then health officials are advising caution after you get vaccinated until we get herd immunity. I think that they're in a dicey situation here to where it sounds like they're just going to keep going on pretty much. It sounds like exactly like they are right now, moving on through this season. There's going to be very limited contact time other than at practice. They're going to be doing a lot of virtual meetings. The combine is not happening in any kind of a normal form. I think a lot of the pro days are going to be virtual pro days. So I think that they probably went through the season for one and realized, okay, it was really effective in terms of minimizing total number of positive cases. And two, we still put a good product out on the field. I think for the most part, other than times where multiple guys had to miss games, I thought the product by and large was a pretty good product this year.
Yeah. I mean, it's sort of like proving a false negative. I don't know if you really have a great sense of what it was going to look like if it didn't happen the way that it did. And we were all probably ready to have some kind of live entertainment that was like a new product that we hadn't seen in a while, and we're all stuck inside. So
it's gonna be like some kind of Dancing with the Stars product or something, you're saying? Like, it's gonna supplant football altogether, or just it was gonna look like a different version of football?
No, I'm saying is that we don't know what it was gonna look like normally.
Yeah.
You know, so it's I would say a lot of these games, when I was watching it, I saw games to me looked a little weird. I mean, they looked pretty rough, especially early on in the season.
Really?
I didn't think so.
I think the number of missed tackles was actually down. I think you might be doing that confirmation bias thing where you're convinced that tackling isn't as good as it used to be.
No, I don't even know. Well, I mean, I think you're more zoned in on the defensive side of it, and I'm more zoned in on how crisp do these offenses look.
That's true. So I'm like, hey, you know? Everything looks
great. Look, defense looks phenomenal. And I'm like, yeah, because offense looks brutal. I mean, they look like rickety out there the first like 5-6 weeks. You know, so I don't know that I could back it up statistically, but I mean, it's just like watching it with an eye that's familiar for it. I mean, I thought they looked like training camp teams to me for the first month. I mean,
that's fair. I think that, yeah. And things were, I guess, dumbed down a little bit.
For sure.
You had to.
Yeah. And those weeks where those players were out due to COVID restrictions, hugely detrimental to those teams where they didn't have those guys out there. So, but I mean, you're still watching games, you're enjoying it. A lot of the players, what I was surprised by is that they still playing in empty stadiums. Those guys looked like they cared to me. I mean, they still looked like they're playing with a lot of energy. Like that was actually pretty surprising to me. I mean, they still looked like they were going out there and giving great effort. It looked like they were doing everything they could to win the games. So
it's got to be such a big disparity between, and we talked about this once before, but just the difference between how it feels inside the stadium and when it's completely empty versus when you're watching on television. And you kind of go along with the suspension of disbelief, you know. I hear crowd noise, and I assume people are getting excited about this, I suppose.
But I mean, you had mentioned, you know, they can't force them to be vaccinated, and I can appreciate that. But at the same time, I still, something about it feels weird to me that after the last year plus, they can't force them. Why can't they force? I mean, are your kids not forced to get vaccinated for a half dozen different things before they go to school?
Not anymore. I can't remember how you can get them out of it. I have to claim religious objection or some kind of an objection.
In the corporate world, you're forced to be vaccinated for half of the jobs you're hired on for. If you work in a hospital.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's a collective bargaining agreement.
Yeah. Thing. Right. Yeah. Right.
I think you still have to, on the player's side, perhaps, try to work towards something, and maybe you feel like you're conceding something. Okay. But it's going to be a whole lot. It's going to be a whole lot better for most of the players that actually want to get vaccinated. And maybe even some of that don't realize, okay, wow, life's going to be a whole lot easier if we're all vaccinated. We kind of just go on a little bit more like normal.
Right. That's the thing. I mean, it's kind of like, look, if you're going to do it, I mean, why aren't you doing it now just so we can get it over with? Because otherwise, you're telling me you're just never going to do it? You're just never going to get vaccinated?
Yeah.
I mean, what's the deal here?
All right, man. We're running out of time here. I've got to go cook food and get ready for the Super Bowl. And we'll pick up and discuss the Super Bowl later this week.
Nice. Sounds good. Buddy. Thanks.